Brand equity is a combination of assets related to a brand that either add or subtract from its value, such as name awareness, perceived quality, intellectual property, etc. Now, high brand equity is valued but difficult to achieve. Low brand equity could be a sign of failure of the brand and the organization. So when something happens that suddenly turns a losing brand into a winner, a lot of people pay attention and they ask, how do we repeat that success, even though the alleged success may be fleeting? How do we repeat success? Is that even the right question? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. I started in the intro with brand equity, but in a lot of ways, I'm also sort of tying in ideas of radical change, very, very sudden radical change. So let me talk about both of those, and then I want to give you the story behind the inspiration behind this this episode. Branding and brand equity, as we all understand, is quite a competitive sport. And no matter what type of organization you are, maintaining a high brand equity is seen as important. Now, I'm drawing brand equity. I mean, there's a lot of different definitions of brand equity. I'm going to use one from David Ocker's book, Managing Brand Equity, which talks about five components, some of which I already mentioned: brand loyalty, name awareness, perceived quality, brand associations that add to the perceived quality, and other proprietary brand assets such as patents, trademarks, etc. That, of course, you know, when you think about a brand, those are the sorts of things that that should be coming to your mind. What is the organization projecting to you as the object, whether that's a product or a service, and how important is it to you? How much are you attracted to it? You know, there's a lot of in common in brand equity with the organizational stream of literature, which I'm drawing from Joya Schultz and Corley's corporate identity, which are sort of the symbols associated with a organization and its services, and also kind of the projected image when we talk about trying to convey or trying to explain to customers, stakeholders, others outside of the organization, you know, about your brand. So the projected image is kind of what I'm talking about here in this case, is what is the image that the organization is projecting to others, especially its customers. When we typically think about, you know, brand equity, and we talk about, you know, the organization, you know, marketing its brand, of course, we don't usually think in terms of seismic shifts. Certainly, when you think about a McDonald's or a Burger King in the United States, we are kind of looking for or interested in those brands that, you know, we can trust over a long period of time. So seismic shifts are not typically what we're thinking about unless a brand has gone down. You know, in other words, it turns into a loser. It turns into something that, you know, people are turned away from. Then when it turns into a winner, when it's when something happens that causes it to become more prominent, you know, that's very interesting. It's something that certainly the organization would like to see. Now, when does that happen? Sports. Perhaps this is more of an American thing than an overseas thing, because in the United States, when you think about sports leagues, there's a very strong American culture of parity in which people want to see different teams achieve success. And so there's a lot more of an even playing field built into its sports leagues. And American sports fans love it when, you know, teams go from last a previous season to first in the next season. We contrast this with, say, European leagues, especially where you have the promotion relegation system. If you wind up in last place, it means you're dropped down to the second tier. And so in European leagues, like when I think about, or, you know, I follow European football, and a lot of times, you know, you go year to year and you'll see a lot of the same teams kind of gravitate to the top of each league every single year. And the same teams that are sort of bouncing back and forth between the first tier and the second tier, or the second tier and the third tier. What I want to talk about is a case where, you know, a team a particular team rose rather suddenly from not necessarily last, but certainly down at the bottom of the table, to somewhere much higher in the table in a very short amount of time through some sort of a radical change. The example I'm going to use here is from the National Hockey League, ice hockey. And the team I'm going to talk about is the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, Carolina, prior to the 2018-2019 season, they spent a little bit over two decades in North Carolina after moving from elsewhere. They've actually spent most of their existence somewhere, you know, sort of in the middle to the lower end of the league. They're in North Carolina, which is not a traditional hockey location. So they've had to go a little bit above and beyond to try to attract attention compared to, say, other parts of the country. Interestingly enough, they did actually win a championship one year in 2006. But for the most part, especially in the last decade, prior to this most recent season, they were consistently in the lower half of the league, not making the playoffs. And in the American system, the regular season is kind of there to establish which half of the teams are going to make the playoffs. And then it's a playdown system to the championship, not like in European sports leagues where the regular season champion is the champion. Carolina, 2018-2019, they were suffering for years without a winning team. They had problems in attendance. Their merchandise was not selling so well as other teams. I mean, basically anything about, you know, brand equity was fairly low compared to other teams. What was interesting was that as typically occurs in American sports, there's a significant number of personnel changes that go on in terms of players. But there was also a leadership change in the front office and personnel, which included the team captain and the coach, were part of the 2006 championship team. You know, they had gone off elsewhere in their playing careers, came back, and, you know, here they are again. Early on in the season, it kind of started off as sort of like a strange new idea, you'd think. So they won a game, and they decided that they were going to salute the fans in an odd way. After the other team, the visiting team, was gone, just lined up at the center line and just basically rushed down the ice and jumped into the end boards. Now, if you're familiar with an ice hockey rink, you can understand that that's kind of a strange thing to do because the glass that stands above the end boards is not exactly the sturdiest thing. You know, it's pretty sturdy. It can handle regular play, but it's not designed for people to jump into it. That drew some attention. As the team started to put a few wins together, they started to come up with more interesting and elaborate ways of celebrating their wins. And a name was given to it. It was called a storm surge. If you do an internet search on Carolina Hurricanes storm surge, you will see what I'm talking about. That what they started to do was they would wait for the opposing team to go, and then they would do a what's known as a skull clap, where you start with a single clap slowly, and then it generally goes faster and faster. The Iceland national football team exercised this, and it's used elsewhere in sports. As soon as the skull clap's over, then they cut to some sort of a choreographed skit or a scene or something. And these got more elaborate every single time the Hurricanes would win a game at home. So they had the team line up as a bunch of bowling pins. Somebody rolled their helmet and everybody fell over. They did the limbo one time. They simulated a baseball walk-off home run. I won't explain what that is if you're not familiar with baseball. They did a basketball scene during the college basketball's annual tournament. You can imagine that the team members were just getting into it. Like, the next home game comes up, they're getting together and they're having conversations, and the team captain, who is sort of running this thing, just, you know, they're coming up with new ideas. They're having, you know, it's all kinds of energy. And the energy was spilling into the stands with the fans. The Hurricanes were in the second half of the season, were starting to win rather regularly. And the arena was filling up, and people were waiting around, waiting to see what were they going to do next. It was actually kind of fun. It became a YouTube sensation. You know, it's, a lot of attention was paid to it. Then in February, there was a really interesting situation happened because not everybody was a fan of this idea. They thought that, you know, this was not the sort of thing that hockey teams should be doing. One in particular, who was a commentator on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, during one of his regular segments in a hockey broadcast, went so far as to just absolutely blast the Hurricanes for their antics and labeled them as a bunch of jerks. That was the term used, a bunch of jerks. Well, this kind of stung a lot of people because there was, you know, so much fun going in with this, the storm surge at this point. Interestingly enough, the Hurricanes came up with probably about the most wonderful response to this that you could think of. Okay. So it was the next, home game. They won the game and the other team left and then they did their skull clap. Half of the team, I guess, had left the ice, for some reason. And everybody kind of presumed something was up, of course. And so then after the skull clap was over, the lights went out, and the half of the team that went off the ice came back on. And they were carrying a bunch of T-shirts with them that they would launch into the crowd. The T-shirts were emblazoned with the phrase, "Bunch of Jerks, Carolina Hurricanes." If you were to go ahead and do an internet search on it, you would find that these T-shirts were up for sale. And eventually, the commentator and the team captain had a meeting of the minds, and they hashed things out, and everything was cool. But I think it sort of exemplified just how, you know, throughout the whole thing, although it was kind of crazy and strange antics, the fact is that it was it was good fun. It was never anything disrespectful done. And eventually, the Hurricanes, when they decided they were going to stop anyway, because they didn't want the distraction anymore themselves. It's this sort of surge served its purpose. And oddly enough, they made it to the Final Four before they were eliminated. So they made it pretty deep into the playoffs. How does this relate to the idea of brand equity and radical change? I think radical change, I mean, when I think about radical change, I like to go back to Donde Plowman's article in which he and a team of folks covered the radical change associated with a church that was failing. A doctor decided to start providing medical services at the church. And then things started just sort of snowballing where, well, this person's going to do something good. I'll do something good too. And then somebody else would do something good. And then it turned into like their Sunday services were a major community event. Plowman offered some ideas about, you know, okay, how does this radical change actually happen? And now think about what I described with the Carolina Hurricanes and see if you agree that these were present. Some sort of initiating condition, okay? That was the beginning of the storm surge, based on just trying to attract attention, trying to get some energy going about the team. A far-from-equilibrium state that allows emergent self-organization. Again, the team, as they started to realize that this surge was working, they started self-organizing to, you know, working with the marketing department, working with the team, working with the arena to try to come up with all sorts of new ideas and just make things happen. And amplifying actions, which I suppose would come in the form of a winning streak, when they started winning on a routine basis, it was very, very easy for all of this to pile together and become even that much more interesting. People were paying attention to the team. If this was another losing season and they only got to do the surge like three or four times, this wouldn't have taken off. And then finally, negative feedback that kept everything spinning out of control. I mentioned before about the fact that the Hurricanes kept this very respectful. They did not do anything wild and off-putting. And that sort of added to the ability for them that when they received criticism, you know, they came up with a respectful response that everybody, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but that a lot of people loved, that they thought was absolutely perfect, and it led to a reconciliation instead of something else that might have hurt more feelings. You can imagine how somebody might have been so angered at being labeled as a bunch of jerks that it could have gone bad, but it did not because of the negative feedback. So there's a case where I think, you know, you kind of see that a loser turns something into a winner. Brand equity was the measure, because now a lot more people, you know, at least hockey fans in the United States and Canada, are a little bit more aware of the Carolina Hurricanes because of this particular season and because of the attention that they grabbed. I think the lesson in this, in a way, is it's hard to try to initiate radical change like this from the top. This was this case, the Plowman's original case. Radical change it happened from the bottom. It was driven by an initiating action that somebody, a member of the organization, took some sort of an initiative, and it snowballed from there. So I think in a lot of ways, that's a lesson that we can take. Now, is the Carolina Hurricanes the only example? Absolutely not. Look up these other two, which also come from the National Hockey League, and perhaps think about other sports teams that did something like that. The first one is the St. Louis Blues Gloria song. And this is from 2018-2019, and the St. Louis Blues were the Stanley Cup champions of that year. And then the other one, which is even more fun, the Florida Panthers Rat Trick of 1996. That particular radical change, spurred by a very, very angry team captain, I'll leave you to internet search to find out what this was. What the fans and the team did was so interesting that the league in the next subsequent offseason banned their on-ice antics. I'll let you sort through that one. But in any case, so if you want to replicate success, it's not so much about trying to drive radical change from the top, but you almost have to have a climate or a culture that looks for those opportunities, that says, okay, what do we see somebody out there who did something that has the potential, if leveraged properly, to snowball into something greater? And I think that's the key to turning a loser into a winner. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.